Reading from the Jiva Dharma, chapter 8 of, let me just get my notes. There they are. Oh, where are they? Here they are. Okay. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Jnanati Manandasya Gananjana Shalakaya Chaksura Militam Yena Tasmai Sri Gurave Namaha. Sri Chaitanya Manobhishtam Stapitam Yena Bhutale. Sayam Rupaha Kadamayam Dadati Sapadantikam. Panchakalpa Talubhyascha Kripa Shindu Vayevacha Patitanam Pavanebhyo Vaishnavebhyo Namo Namah. Sri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Sri Advaita Gadadhar Srivasade Gaur Bhaktavinda. Hare Krishna Hare Krishna 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 Hare Hare. Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. So, I have some guests here today, so I want to explain to them, but also there may be new people on the conference too. So, studying a book by Bhaktivinoda Thakur called Jiva Dharma. And it's very brilliant because it's almost in the form of a novel. And it's the story of the generation of Vaishnavas after Lord Chaitanya disappeared from the world in Navadvipa. And specifically, it focuses on a particular kunj. A kunj is like a forest bower where there's great Paramahamsa Babajis. Babajis means very respectable, renounced people. Pure devotees, and they're even connected with some of Lord Chaitanya's associates that are still living. And it's the story of people coming to Krishna consciousness in that generation. And according to the person who comes, the gurus that are there, to bring him forward in Krishna consciousness, they explain a different tattva or subject in Krishna consciousness. Like the first person who comes is a Mayavadi sannyasi, and he gets converted. So the gurus explain to him, what is the eternal nature of the soul, and then a materialist may come. So, he may be a devotee, and he may believe in God, but he's a materialist. He doesn't have to hear the Maya. So he gets a subject. And then what's going to happen, all the subjects of Krishna consciousness are systematically described in a very brilliant way. And then eventually what will happen, some of them will come forward and get advanced, and then the gurus will enlighten them in Raga Nuga Bhakti and even higher subjects. So it goes the whole gamut. Every subject of Krishna consciousness is covered. So we're in a particular part of the story where these Babajis, they go to visit some other Vaishnavas at a place called Nityanandavat, where Nityananda sat. And it's such an and there there's a Babaji who's 103 years old, Kosari Das Babaji, and that. So this new person comes, and all the Vaishnavas are sitting and they're discussing spiritual topics, how Gaur Lila can enter into Krishna Lila, and then this one person called Nityananda Das, he's a young guy, and he starts asking Haridas Babaji, what is the characteristics of Vaishnava behavior? Right? One who actually realizes that he's actually a part of God eternally, and he's eternally meant to serve God. That is his Nitya Dharma. That is his duty that's always there. We have Sri Dharma, woman's duty, but she can be a man in her next life. those things can change. Brahma, there's different duties, but this is the Nitya Dharma. So one is actually what's so he explains. It's according to their adhikari, their faith. According to their faith, they exhibit different behavior. And basically, there's Kanishna adhikari, which has the beginnings of devotion, which means he sees the deity, but he doesn't really recognize the devotees. So he has faith in the deities, but he doesn't have really faith in the devotees. He doesn't behave with the devotees. And a person like that, it's really not Shuddha Bhakti. It's not pure devotional service. He's not fixed yet in pure devotional service. He's still contaminated by karma or jnana, by fruit of desire, something for myself, or some desire for liberation. So that's a Kanishtha Adhikari. And then a Madhyam Adhikari, he's come to the faith, you know, he really begins to actually understand not only the deity, but God in other people's hearts. And he understands pure devotional service, that the objective of devotion is for Krishna, not for myself. And you know, so it's, you know, people, Kanishtha Adhikari, they can worship the deities, but, they're thinking about their own ego. Like a lot of times people want a Govardhan Shila, right? And then they decorate it, they buy jewels and everything because they think it's cool. They think if they have it beautiful that people respect them. You know what I'm saying? So it's a very, and what Jiva Dharma is, it's a very elaborate discussion of all the time, in detail. So you'll see how detailed it gets. Because we've already been discussing this for a while about Kanishtha Adhikari. And now it's an intelligent person who's asking the details. So I'm going to come up to where we are and give it a little back, not all the way back. So he says, why Kanishthas don't progress? Right? Why don't they progress sometimes? And Babaji says, well, if your association with those inimical to Krishna, then karma, fruit of desires, and jnana will increase. In other words, inimical means one who doesn't really, you know, he's against God. He doesn't really, and he explained too, it doesn't mean with those people that you don't relate to them, because they may be family, they may be business associates, but they don't become you really share your heart on the most important thing, which is the absolute reality. So it's really interesting that what distinguishes a Kanishtha from a Madhyam is that the Kanishtha or the neophyte, he begins to get more and more into the Gana, the family of devotees. And it really, and who he actually has, you know, it's not that he just has friends come over, but the friends are becoming pure Vaishnavas that he comes over. But, you know, more and more. So he said, or they can stay the same. So he said, when they stay the same, well, they have equal association. You know, an equal association. And again, it's not that we don't have family, friends, and things like that, but where is our heart? Where is our intimacy? And then, when is their advancement assured that they can come beyond this platform? Well, he said when association with the bhaktas become prominent. When it becomes prominent. Because when the bhaktas are hosted in the home, you know, then we actually begin to aspire for who they are and what they are and what their devotion is, and this is how our bhakti increases. So then he says, what is a Kanishtha's inclination towards sinful and pious activities? And he said, well, beginning, his inclination is like the karmis and jnanis. You know, he's worshiping the deity, but he's either fruitive, and he looks at things like that. I can make advancement. I can get more for myself. Organic. I'll do this for liberation. But as he progresses, then this propensity is dispelled then the inclination to please Krishna becomes prominent. The inclination to please Krishna, not to become liberated from the world and not to get fruit of things for ourselves. He said, understand, he said, now tell me about the Majjhima Adhikari. So the Majjhima Adhikari, he's a person who really wants to please Krishna. Karma and jnana very little in his life. It's just tinges of it. He's come to that point. And chanting and hearing about Krishna becomes very prominent in his life. Well, the Kanishna Adhikari, that's very secondary. You know, the worship of the deity is prominent, but that becomes very secondary in it, that real internal cultivation of Krishna consciousness. So he said, okay, the Majjhima Adhikari, and he reviews what we get. He has ananya bhakti, exclusive devotion towards Krishna. He makes friendship with the devotees. He's compassionate to the non-devotees. And he neglects those who are inimical. So he has four types of pure devotees and God. He has ananya bhakti. He just wants to please them. And then he makes friendship with those that are equal, those who are innocent. He shows compassion and preaches. And in his friendship, there are four attitudes. Because there's four different types of relations. There's atma-buddhi, the relationship with the self. So his relationship with the self is he loves Krishna more than the self. And mamata-buddhi, his intimacy, is with the devotees. And his ijja buddhi, his intelligence for worship, he worships the devotees. So the devotees become more dear than his own self. He makes intimate relationship with the devotees. He worships the devotees. And tirtha buddhi, the devotees become the place of pilgrimage. When he wants to go to a holy place, he goes to a holy place, not because of the holy place, but because of the devotees that are there. Because we can't access the holy places. But we go because there are people there that actually understand these holy places. And therefore, we go there because those people are there. That's why we go to Vrindavan. If the devotees weren't here, we wouldn't go to Vrindavan. What would it be Vrindavan for us? But we go. I come because I'll meet so many advanced devotees here who actually know the value of this place, actually can access this place. And this Majjhima Adhikari, he understands fully that Krishna is God and the ultimate reality is God's energies. He understands fully that the means to realize Krishna is devotion, bhakti, and that the goal is experiencing our relationship with Krishna, which is called prema. And basically, such a person, he chants without offense. So, Camila and Shane, you see how this book deals with all the subjects in very detailed ways? So now he comes, and then, so he said, what are the secondary symptoms of the Majjhima Bhakta? The primary symptom is chanting and hearing. The secondary symptom is the way in which he lives his life. His life is completely surrendered to the will of Krishna and is favorable to bhakti. That's at the will of Krishna. And the will of Krishna doesn't always mean chanting and hearing. For a mother, the will of Krishna is watching her child, not sitting in the Bhagavatam class where her child runs across the street. Or, you know. So it's the will of Krishna. And that becomes their guiding force. What does Guru and Krishna want? That becomes their guiding force. And now Nityananda Das asks very intelligently, can he still commit sins or offenses? A Madhyamadhikari, because he's so fixed. So the Babaji says, well, the tendency to commit sins or offenses may remain in the beginning stage, but gradually these will disappear. Whatever offenses or sins are present at the beginning stage are like chickpeas that are about to be ground to a pulp. They're like chickpeas that are cooked, right? So they're still there, but they're very soon going to be mashed into falafel. Sorry to give examples that people understand. So, Yukta Vairagya is the life and soul of the Majjhima Bhakta. And what Yukta Vairagya is? Camila, you remember what it is?
To renounce,
but renounce those things that cannot be used in Krishna's service. It's called balanced attachment, Yukta Vairagya. Right? You don't give up things that can be used in Krishna's service. Even, you know, emotional needs that we have in different types of relationships that we need to be peaceful in our mind. But we renounce those things that cannot be engaged in Krishna's service. So therefore, we have enough attachment in our life so that our heart doesn't close to bhakti. And we have enough detachment in our life that our heart doesn't become filled with sensual indulgence and egotistic indulgence. Then Nityananda asks, does the Madhyam Bhakta have any trace of karma, jnana, or extraneous desires? Babaji, in the initial stages, a faint trace of these things may remain, but finally they are uprooted. Whatever vestiges of karma and jnana remain at the beginning of the Madhyam manifest occasionally, but they gradually fade into oblivion. I can see you're enjoying this philosophy. I'll just give you the book. All the notes will be there. You can take notes, though. Nityananda, it's good to take notes because it means you're really... Do such bhaktas even desire to live? And if so, why? Why are they living? See, he said, Babaji, actually they have no desire to live or die or attain liberation. They desire only to attain consummation of their bhajan. They live because the body gives them a chance to perfect Krishna consciousness. And even Krishna recognizes that. Because even if the devotee becomes liberated and there's no longer need for karma, Krishna keeps him in the body so he can perfect his bhajan. Nityananda, but why don't they long for death? What happiness can come from remaining in the gross body? When they die, will they not attain the spiritual forms and identities by Krishna's mercy? Why are they staying here? And Babaji says,
And this is so nice. It's really what Vaishnavism is. They have no independent desires. All their nadanam, najanam, nasundarim, kavitam, vagajishakame, mama jandani, jamna ishva bhavata, but, and this is shikshastika. We're not reading from here now. I don't desire wealth, fame, beautiful women, learning. I only desire your devotion, birth after birth. It means they don't even care about liberation. They just want to serve. Narayana prasarve, nakutas chanya bibhiti, swagata vaga narakesha. One who is Narayana parayana, he really loves Krishna. Swagata vaga narakesha. It doesn't matter if he's in the heavenly planets, the earth planets, or hell. He doesn't matter. Doesn't care. Their desires are solely dependent on Krishna's will because they're firmly convinced that everything is happening by his will, and whatever happens is only because of his desire. They have, therefore, no need to aspire for anything independently. Whatever, it's just Krishna's will. And whatever happens is Krishna's will. Because when you have sharanagata, when you really have surrendered to Krishna, means what? That you have full faith in Krishna's shelter. And that by serving Krishna, everything is there. Everything is there by serving Krishna. And you're confident that in that service to Krishna, you are protected. Because Krishna will do what's best. Whether he takes your body or keeps your body, whether he keeps you healthy or gives you a disease, you just have that faith. Surrender is faith. And what is that faith? The faith is, and the symptom of really taking shelter of Krishna is that you accept those things that are favorable for pleasing Krishna, and you reject those things that are unfavorable. And you're completely convinced that Krishna will maintain you. And Krishna will protect you and do what's best. And you embrace humility. You embrace that you have a shelter. I've understood the symptoms of Madhyama Adhikari. Now please tell me about the secondary symptoms of the Uttama Adhikari. So the primary symptom of an Uttama Adhikari is he sees his bhav everywhere. And therefore, he sees everyone is serving Krishna, and everyone has Krishna's mercy. In the consciousness of Uttama Adhikari, Uttama Bhagavat, one doesn't preach. To preach, one has to come to Madhyama Adhikari. Because Madhyama Adhikari makes distinctions. So an Uttama Adhikari will come to Madhyama Adhikari to preach. In other words, he'll make discrimination. He just won't go by his heart. Even Prabhupada saw, his disciples as his gurus. You know, he had that feeling. But he had to do his service. So he had to make discrimination. Because if you look at it that way, you're not going to teach anyone. You're not going to instruct anyone. So that's the primary. Now, what are the secondary symptoms? And he said the secondary symptoms are their bodily activities in an Uttama Adhikari. There's transformations and things. But even these cannot actually be viewed separately as secondary symptoms because they are so much under the control of praying, which is beyond the influence of material modes. He said for an Uttama Adhikari, really, there's no secondary symptoms. Because everything is prema bhakti. Everything is his bhav. Even his actions are his bhav. When he moves his hand, it's by Bob. Everything moves by his prema. There's no primary and secondary. Everything is that prema, that love. So Nityananda now, he's so smart, this Nityananda Das. So now he asks the question. There is no provision in the Shastras for the Kanishtha Adhikaris to renounce household life. Kanishtha Adhikari can't take sannyas. And Madhyam Adhikaris may live as either householders or renunciates. Is it possible that some Uttama Adhikaris may live as householders? What do you think? Huh? What do you think? What, yeah?
I think yes, because everything is bad. Even though
that everything is what?
Like
let's see what they say. Babaji, one's level of eligibility cannot determine whether one is a householder or renunciate. The only criterion is one's advancement in bhakti.
Mm-hmm.
You see, the only criterion of bhakti is one's advancement. There may be a sannyasi who's a mayavadi. He has no bhakti. And there may be a grihastha who's comes the highest devotion. There is certainly no harm if an Uttama Adhikari bhakta remains a householder. All the grihastha bhaktas of Raja were Uttama Adhikaris. Nandam Yashoda were married. Many grihastha bhaktas of our Chaitanya Mahaprabhu Uttama Adhikaris, Ramananda Roy is the foremost example of this. So Ramananda Roy was the most confidential associate of Lord Chaitanya. He was a grihastha. And Sri Damodar was a renunciate. Nityananda Das, Prabhu, if an Uttama Adhikari is a grihastha, and a Madhyam Adhikari Bhakta is in the renounced order, how should they behave to each other? Right? Because you know that you have to pay obeisances in the morning every, the first time you see a sannyasi. This is actually the etiquette. And Prabhupada established this. It's in the Shastra. So what happens is an Uttama Adhikari Grihastha and Madhyam Sannyasi. So how do they relate? The person who is less qualified, oh, you have the book. Okay, the person who is less qualified should offer dandavat pranam to the person who is more qualified. This stipulation is only for the benefit of the Madhyam Adhikari, because the Uttama Adhikari does not expect respect from anyone. In all living beings, he sees the presence of Bhagavan. So for the benefit of others, he does this. Nityananda Das, should one bring many Vaishnavas together and hold festivals for distributing Bhagavad Prasad? Right, Shane, there's so many interesting questions. The whole book is like this. Mm-hmm. Learning all tattvas, all details. Here you see, here's my book, it's underlined. And, yeah. From the spiritual point of view, there is no objection if many Vaishnavas gather together for some particular occasion and a Madhyam Adhikari Grihastha Bhakta wants to honor them by distributing Bhagavad Prasad. However, it's not good to make a pompous display of serving the Vaishnavas, for then this activity will become adulterated with the mode of passion. So it's again, anything can be appropriated to the false ego. Even invite the Vaishnavas over and have big things to show your own. Therefore, in the nectar of devotion, one of the principles is one should not accept many disciples, one should not read many books, and one should not open temples, big temples. It's actually one of the principles, one of the 20 of the first principles. Of course, the idea is all these activities can be so imbued with your ego. You're building a big temple, but it's a monument to how great you are, not to the service of Krishna. Or you're reading many books, not to be transformed, but to have knowledge so people respect you. Or you're accepting many disciples to simply get control over people. But you have to do it in a mood of service, that means. And you have to be very careful that all these things are done in the mood of service. Nityananda, a new caste has emerged in Baragachi consisting of people who refer themselves as descendants of Vaishnavas. Kanishtha Adhikari householders invite them and feed them in the name of Vaishnav Seva. How is this to be viewed? So with Bhaktivinoda Thakur and Srila Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati Thakur dealt with is after the time of Lord Chaitanya, the Krishna Bhakti, you know, the chain of disciple succession gets broken because everyone has ego. So they start to grab things for their own ego and make their own philosophies for their own ego. And you get different philosophies. I'm talking to people. That's why you like meeting Virabahu Prabhu. Shastra. Right? The Shastra. You need people who know the Shastra and keep things together so that people just don't move according to their own desires. But it happens. And then great acharyas have to expose this on the basis of Shastra. Otherwise, the line of pure devotion will be lost. In some places, the Radha Krishna thing became a sex cult. Radha Krishna, we should imitate them. And people have to watch. I have a godbrother in Vrindavan. He's a great scholar. And he's a Sahajiya. He believes this. And he's one of the greatest scholars, and he believes this. So there's so many ways that it enters in. You know, and therefore, you have to keep the Guru Parampara intact. And we have to have gurus. And we have to guide ourselves by people who know the Shastra. Otherwise, our attachments will project. You know, basically what happens is a person's philosophy is often used to support their attachments. Because people want to enjoy, but they don't want guilt. So if you can, to enjoy without guilt, you have to have a justification for it. And therefore, when a guru is instructing a disciple, unless the disciple is fully surrendered and faithful, he can't give him everything. Because some of the things that he'll tell him, which are truth, will reflect on that person's own attachments. The truth may tell a person you got to give up something, or you have to accept something. You see, so truth, therefore, when you're preaching, you're not just opposing someone's philosophy, you're opposing their attachments because the philosophy is supporting their attachments. So a teacher can't give everything unless the disciple really surrenders and shows seva and a mood of service. And the teacher's confident that they're willing to surrender to the truth. So it's so common that the lines of teaching, even after Prabhupada, you know, you have Ritvik philosophy, you know, you get so many different things that go in different lines subtly. And you can see it. So Therefore, it's very important to read Prabhupada's books every day. Very important. Nityananda Das, I don't see Shuddha Bhakta in any of them. They only call themselves Vaishnavas. Some of them wear kopins. So they dress as Babaji's. They dress as renunciates. Babaji, why is this type of practice in vogue? It is not proper. I can only surmise that it's going on because Kanishtha Vaishnavas cannot recognize who a true Vaishnava is. And therefore, there must be education. There must be education. Otherwise, people won't have discrimination. Do the descendants of Vaishnavas deserve any special regard, these people? Babaji, honor is due only to those who are actually Vaishnavas. If the descendants of Vaishnavas are pure Vaishnavas, they'll be honored in proportion to their advancement in bhakti. Nityananda, what if the descendant of a Vaishnava is only a worldly man? When they say descendant of Vaishnava, is some kind of sect or something here that they're probably dealing with at the time. But Babaji, then he should be considered as a worldly man and not as a Vaishnava. He should not be honored as a Vaishnava. One should always remember the instruction given by Sriman Mahaprabhu in the Shikshastaka in verse 3. Shrinadati sanichena tarorati shihishnana amanina madanena kirtaniyasada. One should chant Sri Harinam in a humble state of mind, thinking himself more significant than the straw in the street and more tolerant than the tree. One should be devoid of all sense of false prestige and ready to offer all respects to others. In such a state of mind, one can chant Sri Harinam constantly. One should be free from pride and should offer appropriate respects to others. One should offer respects to the Vaishnavas. One should offer Vaishnavas the respect due to a Vaishnava. And he should offer those who are not Vaishnavas the respect that befit any human being. If one does not offer respect to others, he does not acquire the necessary qualification to chant Sri Nam. So actually, I have one book here that someone gave me called The Mantram Handbook. It's some person. I just wanted to see what he said. But he had 10 principles for chanting, and one was put others before yourself. You know, the mood of respect. It's so important, offering all respects to others, and especially those people that we may have envy for. And a lot of times they'll be Vaishnavas, because that's our standard of what's great. There may be someone, you know, we may move forward, and then someone may surpass us. And then we may, you know, be envious. So all these things are so important. I have a godbrother, and we may meet him. Before he chants, he spends 1 hour or 2 hours paying obeisances to Vaishnavas in his mind, and offering prayers. All the eternal associates, Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, all Krishnas, and all his godbrothers. He said even ones that are Swapaksha in the same family, and Swapaksha in the same family, and Dipaksha. People who are on a different mood. He offers respects to them all, seeing their good qualities, because he knows to chant the holy name, you have to be free from enmity and envy. So we learn from these people, and it's saying here, same thing. Nityananda Das, how can one be free from pride? Babaji, one should not proudly think, I am a Brahmin, I am wealthy, I am learned, scholar, I'm a Vaishnav, I have renounced family life. People may well offer respect because one of such qualities, but one should not want to be honored by others out of such egotistic pride. One should always think oneself to be worthless, insignificant, destitute, and lower than a blade of grass. Nityananda, it seems from this that one cannot be a Vaishnava without humility and compassion. Babaji, this is quite true. Nityananda, then does Bhakti Devi depend on humility and compassion? Does Bhakti depend on humility and compassion? Interesting. No. Bhakti is completely independent. Bhakti is the personification of beauty. And she is the supreme ornament. She does not depend on any other good quality. Humility and compassion are not separate qualities, but are included within bhakti. I am a servant of Krishna. I am destitute. I have nothing. Krishna is my all in all. The bhakti that is expressed in these attitudes is itself humility, dānya. Now, this is incredible. I'm just going to finish up with this, but we'll do this tomorrow. I'm really feeling now, those of you that are listening, I really feel now we're getting into the real juice of bhakti now. All the different tattvas, how to behave. The tenderness of the heart experienced towards Krishna is known as bhakti. All other jivas are servants of Krishna, and tenderness of heart towards them is compassion, dāya. So the tenderness of the heart towards Krishna is bhakti, and the tenderness to others is called compassion. Therefore, compassion is included within bhakti. Shema, forgiveness, is the bhava situated between humility and compassion. When I am so wretched and insignificant myself, how can I inflict punishment upon others? When this attitude is combined with compassion, forgiveness automatically appears. So when you have humility, you don't think you're so great, so, you know, true humility. Humility is happy small. You don't want to be great. You're happy to be in the arms of Krishna. You're happy to be dependent. You're satisfied with that. And it gives you a kind of view of insignificance, and you may see your faults and magnify them, but not out of a self-deprecation in comparison to others, or a self-deprecation that my goal is to be great. My goal is to be Krishna's servant, and I may be fallen from that. So it's mixed with this healthy mood of devotion. And when there's also that mood and attendance towards others, then that is compassion. Maybe the third switch is the light. It means the generator light. Try the third one. Okay, fourth one. That's the fan, fifth one. Okay. Forgiveness is also included within bhakti. Krishna is real, satya. The fact that jivas are servants of Krishna is also real, and is the fact that the material world is only a boarding house for the jivas. That means that bhakti is also real, because these truths are based on the jiva's relationship with Krishna, which is itself bhakti. Truth, humility, compassion, and forgiveness are four special qualities that are included within bhakti. Okay. Hare Krishna. Is there anyone that would like to say, ask a question?
Hare Krishna Maharaj. This is Gail.
Hare Krishna. How about Gail?
I have two. I don't know if I can get two, but I have two.
I have to give you your time, your due time.
Say again?
I have to give you what's your time.
Oh, thank you.
Yes.
Okay. One question is about the Kanishtha Adhikari. You're saying that he doesn't recognize Krishna in the devotees, only on the altar, and therefore he has selfish motivation. Because of that, we can understand that he has selfish motivation in approaching the deity. And so my question is, why is it not possible for a Kanishtha to approach the deity purely, even though he doesn't, maybe out of just ignorance, you know, he might not recognize the deity in the devotee, you know. In other words,
you're so good. I always know what question you're going to ask. But what I'm just saying here, Gail, is this is what it says, right? So I myself am trying to figure it out, but this is what it says. It says that, you know, this is what the Kanishtha has. You know, he doesn't worship he doesn't really see God in the devotees. And therefore, it's not pure devotional service. But, you know, it's so clear that when people are like that, you know, that there's some contamination. Why are they not respectful to the devotees? There must be some envy in them. You know, so it's not a very, you know, it's mixed with some kind of envy. In fact, it's mentioned in that in Satya Yuga there was no deity worship. And then when Treta Yuga came, the great sadhus, they were observing the people, and they were seeing that they were becoming, you know, they were impure. Because they were impure, they had a hard time respecting others and worshiping, and even worshiping devotees that have high consciousness. There was so much doubt in them. And therefore, the sages established the deity as kind of an, you know, for neophyte people who actually couldn't see God and worship God and others, they established the deities. And so there is some kind of connection. I don't know what the subtle thing is, but it seems that, you know, where does that go, and why is it that one can't actually really respect and worship the devotees? There must be some envy. You know, some separate consciousness or something, that you feel comfortable just with the exclusive worship of God here and not seeing him everywhere. I'd have to think about it more deeply, but it's definitely connected. Of course, that doesn't mean that advanced devotees don't worship deities, but they worship them for another reason. They worship them to develop their relationship with Krishna. Yeah, what else?
So, to envy others means that somehow you are also envying Krishna?
Something like that. There's some impurity.
Mm-hmm.
I observe it and said it in Shastra. I haven't intellectually delved into it and connected them absolutely. But it's my perception.
Mm-hmm.
You see it. People just worship the deity, and they don't have a profound sense of changing their consciousness. And you see it in India. People are in the temple, and they worship the deity, you know, and then they live an ordinary material life with friends and enemies.
Mm-hmm.
So now you're saying, is it possible that someone has tremendous love for the deities and not for others? Why wouldn't he have it for others if he had tremendous love for Krishna and is pure?
Mm-hmm.
Okay, Gail, what's your next question? Thank you for that.
The other one was when you were saying that the Majjhima, or when you were talking about primary and secondary manifestations of bhakti and connection with the Majjhima, as opposed to the Uttama, who everything he does is, you know, prema or bhakti, so there's no consideration of secondary manifestations for him. So this concept of primary and secondary, I don't understand the concept of these things.
Secondary, let's say in Uttama Bhakti, the primary characteristic is, you know, what becomes most evident and most important in the person is that he just wants to please Krishna. And then the secondary character, Tusta Lakshanam, is that he's free from other extraneous desires and is not covered by karma and get. Tatastha means almost like Sarup Lakshanam. The term Sarup means fully your own, and Tatastha means kind of at the borderline. So you can look at Bhakti, I mean, the Mayavadi can be free from other desires or something like that. Maybe, or someone is not. Anyway, I'm not really sure. It's just primary. It's just primary. It's the thing that you see most. It's the most prominent thing. It's the most important thing. So the most important thing in bhakti is that your activities are done with the intention to please Krishna. And that's the primary characteristic. And in terms of Madhyamadakari, his primary symptoms is how he's dealing with God, how he's dealing with others, how he's dealing with the various relationships he has. And the secondary characteristic is how you see the will of God in his life.
Okay.
Okay, thank you, Gail.
Thank you also.
Anybody else like to say hello today? One more person, say hello, or two more people.
Hare Krishna Guru Maharaj, this is Bhadrara Devadasi.
Jai, thank you. You and your husband and I was just thinking, you're so steady on all these classes. And that's what a disciple means. He hears from the guru, and he gets educated. So thank you so much for that.
Thanks for your wonderful classes, Mara.
Anybody else like to say hello? Okay, then we'll end for today.